I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores. It feels cheesy to say this, but welcome to the new year. It's good to be back. I just wanted to make a couple of announcements before we get started. First, I'm working on an upcoming episode that will highlight the unique experiences of women aged 50 and older, and I'd love to hear your stories. Head over to she-explores.com or the link in the show notes for more details. Also, I love staying in touch between episodes through our She Explores podcast Facebook group. We talk about each week's episode, future ideas, and share accomplishments. It's so nice to stay connected. Okay, on with the show.
I want people to be okay with weirdness and uniqueness and not question themselves because they have this weird dream. One myth I want to break is that it's too late to do anything at a certain point in your life. You know, I'm in my 40s. I want to show people that you can do what you want. You want to be a mountain nomad? Go for it. I went through the phase where people were laughing at the idea, or I kept it a secret because I'm nervous people will look down on it and they think I'm going to fail. So I just want to see how far it's going to go.
This is Marinelle De Jesus. And by the end of this episode, you'll find out why last year, at the age of 41, she decided to leave her 15-year legal career in Washington, D.C. to pursue her very own weird dream, becoming a mountain nomad, organizing adventure treks around the world. Marinelle's is a story of great cultural expectations and the clarity she found when she stopped listening to the voice in her head that told her everything she needed to do to survive, and started listening to another voice, the one that was screaming to live. Marinelle spent her childhood growing up in Manila, the capital of the Philippines. As the only daughter, she was discouraged from taking risks and playing outside. What was it like growing up in Manila?
Well, it was hot, hot, humid. It's crowded, but it was fun. My childhood was great. I had a lot of friends growing up in my neighborhood. I had three older brothers, so I actually was the only girl. So it was a weird kind of scenario because culturally, when you have boys in the Philippines, they kind of get away with a lot of things. I guess that's kind of true for a lot of cultures. But for me, I was strictly forbidden to do certain things like ride a bike, or climb a tree, or do anything physical. My mom especially was very protective because I was the only girl, and they have this cultural thing where you just very, very overprotective of the daughter. And so my dad was the same, but he was more laid back. It was more my mom who disciplined everyone and made sure to have the rules in the house. My dad was the only one working. He was an accountant, and he was the breadwinner. My mom was a housewife. She took care of us the entire time until we left. In a way, it's kind of strange because my mom was a very strong person and she was the boss in the house, which I think, if anything, I learned my strength from her more so than my dad. But she was also very critical. So it was a very difficult childhood as well because she had too many rules to a point that it wasn't really normal. And then when I came to America, things shifted. So that was challenging to have some sort of a culture, not only just a culture shock of just, you know, the language and the, you know, the day-to-day life, but the way people treat family structure and authority in the home. That's the life of an immigrant that a lot of people don't really know about. There is an aspect of it where the transition can be very rough.
Marinelle was 13 when she moved from the Philippines to Seattle.
I think in a way I was lucky because when you're young enough, you can assimilate more. And I think my parents had to sacrifice a lot because my dad was an accountant and he came to the U.S. and he couldn't get jobs as an accountant because he was too old. I mean, they won't say that to you, but he was already, I think, almost 50 when he came. And the sad part was he sacrificed because he only worked as a janitor all the time when he was in the U.S., so he gave up a very lucrative position of being a bank manager in the Philippines, came over and became a janitor for a bunch of hotel chains. My mom was forced to work because we had to make ends meet. So America turned out to be much more expensive to live in. So she sacrificed as well because she was a housewife. All of a sudden, she got into this workforce, but she couldn't get a good job. She had actually a marketing degree from a university, but of course, she was older. And so it would have been difficult for her to get that job. There were a lot of sacrifices, you know. My two older brothers, they had to work at the hotel with my parents. I was the lucky one, to be honest.
Marinelle didn't have to work. She entered high school early. She wasn't raised to spend time in the outdoors, even though there were mountains near Manila. That didn't change in Seattle either. Hiking and camping was a luxury that they couldn't afford, nor would it have been encouraged for the only daughter in the family. Survival took on a very different shape growing up as an immigrant than it does for her today when she's trekking mountains all over the world. Survival looked like food on the table. It looked like pleasing her parents. It looked like fulfilling their expectations. You didn't have access to the outdoors like you do now. It was a different relationship for you.
Yes. So my family was rooted on the idea of survival in terms of values. My parents just want us to survive and be well. It wasn't like, go experience the world, quit your job. They will never tell me. That's not the culture at all. Of course, I did it, but which is actually fascinating. I don't even know how I got here. But to be honest, I grew up scared of the future, scared if we're gonna make it. Are we gonna be okay? Am I gonna be a lawyer? Am I gonna be something so that I'll survive? Am I gonna be married? I have to make sure I'm fine. And that's part of the deal too, is having a partner and having a family in the future. So it's all about survival when I was growing up. And especially when we moved to Seattle, we had a tiny, little tiny, one, two bedroom apartment with five of us. I saw it. I saw the hardship. My parents had arguments about the life being rough, and they came to America expecting something else. Turns out it was such a hard life for them. To me, growing up was a mixture of survival and just kind of finding yourself somehow in the mess.
Yeah. So I guess you kind of answered one of my next questions. It's like you were attracted to the legal profession a bit for that stability, for the success of that.
Yes, I'll admit. Actually, it's kind of funny. I was going to be a doctor because I actually did pre-med in college, finished all the courses. I was about to take the MCAT, and then I decided I don't really want to be a doctor. That's not my thing. And I realized I was bored in classes. I felt sort of trapped, and I didn't feel like that was my personality. So I ended up thinking, what else can I do? And I majored in social work. And if I had my choice, I just wanted to help people. But the problem was money. Maybe this was when my parents kicked in their values that, no, are you going to make, so there were voices in my head saying, are you going to be okay with social work? So I think part of me decided, what else can I do that's advocacy, but I can make more money? And I thought, oh my God, law is the same, except you're in the legal field. So the roles are pretty much more or less the same. And I represent social workers in my practice. That's what I did for 15 years. So I did law, I think primarily because there was that push from the survival mindset when I was growing up.
Marinelle's first trip abroad was to Cancun to celebrate taking the bar exam, but she doesn't count that as her first time traveling. It wasn't until after wrapping up a clerkship in Washington, D.C., that she had some free time on her hands.
My clerkship was ending, and then I thought, this is the start of my career. So I was a little nervous, but then I thought, okay, so I think I have a chance with the government. I'll just put in all my resumes to whatever places and then see how it goes. And then I thought, should I just stay in DC and do nothing and sit around? And I thought, you know what? I kind of want to travel. And then I actually thought, why don't I go to Guatemala and learn some Spanish? So I did. I decided to do that. But my mom was, it's funny, my mom actually stopped me and tried to get in the way. My mom is very worried about me traveling. And she said, did you pay for all your expenses? Yes. And she goes, you don't have to learn Spanish over there. Just stay here and then I'll pay you all the money. And I'll give you extra $1,000 to stay here. I was being bribed by my mom because she just thought it was dangerous. I couldn't do it. She thinks that something was just going to go wrong. And I almost said yes to my mom because she was really scaring me. I thought for a second, oh, maybe she's right.
But instead, Marinelle listened to her own voice and resisted the well-intentioned pressure from her mom. She decided to go to Guatemala, And she didn't do it for anyone else. She did it for herself.
And I said, no, Mom, I'm not going to go for your thing. I'm going. And so she was so upset at me. She just, you know, what can she do, right? So I decided to go, and I still didn't have a job lined up. So I ended up going. I remember bringing this big luggage with me, like a 50-pound luggage thing that you check in. And I was like walking in the cobblestone street of Antigua, and I realized I will never take this with me again. And that's when I first discovered backpacks, like the one you put on your back. That was the start of the backpacking scene for me. I met people who were nomads, who've been doing it, who quit their jobs. So the 9-to-5, quitting 9-to-5 and being a nomad is not a new thing. That's when I was like, wow, these people are doing this thing. Oh, one day, maybe I can do this.
Guatemala was the start of travel and also Marinelle's very first hike. But her career in law was just starting, and she had no plans to give that up.
And then I came back, so I got a job, so it worked out, and it's like, okay, great, so now I have a career, I'm safe. And so I feel like I did my obligation to my parents. They were very happy. I was practicing as a prosecutor, and I worked hard my first few years. So I focused on my career, but then in the back of my mind, I always thought, I want to travel, you know, I want to do what I did. It never left me.
Marinelle used her vacations to travel both solo and through tour groups. She went to Morocco and Europe.
Hiking came a bit later on. I was in D.C. already, and I was stressed out with my job. And I felt like, well, there's got to be some other outlet besides coming home and just, you know, going to the city and doing city stuff. That's when I discovered meetup.com. And meetup.com is a very pivotal point in my life. I would not be here. It's like I'm giving props to Meetup right now, but I am. But honestly, without Meetup.com, I would not be here where I am.
She scoured the site for opportunities to get out of D.C. and hike. And her experience highlights one of her qualities that I deeply admire, the willingness to try again, even when it's uncomfortable, even when it doesn't feel like the right fit.
And I signed up, and the first time I did it, I hated it because they were going really fast. It was a day hike, and I signed up for a fast group. And I was thinking maybe it's not for me because it was too fast. I couldn't keep up. I was discouraged. So the first time was horrible. But then I decided, well, maybe I made a wrong choice on the event. So let me try other groups. And so I looked and looked, and I found out some other ones, and they were beginner friendly. So I made sure that this was a slower pace. And then I just kept doing it, and I realized I found some people that I can hike with, and I just started from there. And then I met people who wanted to have hike leaders in their meetup events, and so I said, why don't I? Sure, I'll try it. And so I ended up organizing the hikes, and then I discovered backpacking overnight, and so I started doing that as well, and then loved it. At first, actually, I hated it again because I signed up for the wrong group, so I did it twice. The backpacking group that I signed up for was very fast. I think they were more intermediate and beginner. And for me, it was really tough because that was the first time I had to carry a heavy pack. And that was very foreign to me.
Marinelle persisted. And at one point, she had 6 to 7 groups that she led as an organizer. Meetup taught her how to manage groups and different personalities.
But my true love is really traveling overseas. So one day I woke up and said, why don't I bring people overseas?
So 10 years ago, Marinelle used Meetup to plan her first overseas trekking excursion.
The very first overseas trek I did was pretty big, actually, now that I think about it. It was the Annapurna Circuit in Nepal.
Wow. The Annapurna Circuit trek is at least 100 miles long and climbs to over 17,000 feet. I love how big her first trip was. Hear how it went and what it led to after a word from our sponsors. This episode of She Explores is brought to you by HealthIQ. HealthIQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like hikers, runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and more. What HealthIQ is doing, it makes so much sense. HealthIQ customers can save up to 33% on their life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. pretty cool that spending time outside not only benefits our mental and physical health, it can also result in paying less for life insurance. And you can even save if you have a pre-existing condition, because managing and overcoming a chronic illness is really hard work. I love that Health IQ is a life insurance agency that takes a big picture approach to insurance. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/sheexplores or mention the promo code SHEEXPLORES, that's SHEEXPLORES with no space, when you talk to a Health IQ agent. That's healthiq.com/sheEXplores. This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Deuter. They believe that your gear should enhance your time in the outdoors, which is why they've been making technical packs German-engineered since 1898 for comfort, fit, and ventilation. And speaking of ventilation, next month Deuter launches their newly redesigned Futura Series pack. Did you know that decades ago, Deuter was the first one to launch a mesh back system that keeps your pack off your back? It's a priceless feature for staying dry, safe, and comfortable on hikes. Back sweat is all too real, no matter the season. And make sure to follow Deuter on social media, because this spring they're launching a hashtag MyDeuterAdventure campaign, where you can enter to win a trip to join representatives from 6 or 7 nations for 7 days of adventure in Germany, where Deuter is headquartered. All you have to do is share your hiking photos, and I know you have them. I think it would be incredible to experience the outdoors of a foreign country with new friends from all over the world. Stay equipped for a life of adventure with a durable, comfortably crafted Deuter pack. Find your perfect fit at www.deuter.com. That's www.deuter.com.
The very first overseas trek I did was pretty big, actually, now that I think about it. It was the Annapurna Circuit in Nepal. And I didn't expect people to sign up, but for this one, I had 5 other people to join me. These are strangers. I don't know anything about them. We have never met before. And so I think the risk I took in hindsight is pretty huge, because for one, it's overseas. I've never been to Nepal. It was my first time too. Second, I'm kind of organizing and leading their group, so they kind of rely on me a lot. So that's a lot of responsibility and pressure. And third, I'm with strangers. I don't know what their personality is going to be like. What if they're insane? You know, what if they go berserk on the trail? But I don't know. For some reason, I just find that very appealing.
Marinelle is a connector. She takes pleasure in connecting the people in her groups with each other and the guides she hires from the countries they trek in. And by doing this, she doesn't just connect two worlds, she brings together cultures. But I'm getting ahead of our story.
We did the Annapurna Circuit successfully and had really awesome time. And so I kept doing it. After that, I was like, okay, let me try again. Where do I want to go next? So it became like a bucket list, but then I just invite people. And I think the second one I did, if I'm not mistaken, was New Zealand. And I organized the entire thing for 3 weeks, and I had 6 people with me, and it went well again. So I kept doing it, and it always worked out. And so I think by 10 years later on, I think I've had about 3-4 trips a year. So I've done about 30 to 40 trips before I launched my company. So I feel like honestly, I've been doing this forever. I just made it formal. I think it's because I just realized it's just never going to end. It's something I just love.
10 years, 40 or so treks in places like Peru, Nepal, Tanzania, Chile, Mongolia, Nicaragua, Indonesia, South Africa, and more. All the while, Marinelle was balancing a full-time legal career. As she fell in love with the mountains, she began to wonder what was next for her. She took a year to trek some of the most remote trails in the world. She didn't quite know it yet, but she was on her way to becoming a mountain nomad. You spent a year trekking, and I guess all the while you were thinking about whether or not you would continue on the path of being a lawyer and whether that path would lead towards being a judge. And were you wrestling with that, or were you pretty sure then that that wasn't going to be your path.
That 1 year was actually the wrestling time. I wrestled with a number of issues. One was, I go home, do I want to get married? That was one of the things. Should I go date every weekend so I can find a partner, because I'm running out of time? Do I want to have kids? That was another question. And then the third, of course, what do I want to do with my life career-wise? Do I want to continue being a lawyer, or do I want to be a judge? Do I want to be a supervisor? Or do I want to leave my practice and do a different field, or maybe go private practice? I did a lot of wrestling in that 1 year, and I think it's necessary to go through that. That pretty much is a pivotal point in my life. I could have backed out of the questioning. If I did that, I would have come back and just stayed in a status quo easily. But because I was stuck in a 1 year away and I spent a lot of time alone, I couldn't leave the questions unanswered. And that was a good thing. It was very kind of uncomfortable, all the questions popping left and right. But I think in the end, because I braved through it and I said, you know what, I'm going to answer the questions. I'm not going to deny the questions. I'm not going to run away from them. I'm going to face them. And I did. And the answers were very hard. They were hard to accept, but they were my answers. You know, for one, I came back and the first thing I did after a year of being gone was, I'm selling the house. It was a 3-bedroom, 2-bath. Why the heck do I have a big house? That's my start of becoming minimalist. So that was another question, you know, how much possession do I need, right, in life? So, and then the second, of course, after that, the second thing I did was, do I want to do something with my passion? Because I knew I fell in love with the mountains. I knew I love organizing. I want to take people overseas, and that's what I love, and that gives me joy. So I started my LLC. That's when I did the LLC in 2016. So I sold my house. I started the LLC, and then I thought it'd be nice to start writing again because I haven't written in a while. That's actually authentically mine. For 15 years, I wrote as a lawyer, and it became dry and boring. You know, my creativity was lost.
You mentioned a bunch of questions that you were kind of wrestling with. What was the hardest one to answer, to firmly choose the other path?
I think it's whether I am willing to become a mountain nomad. I mean, the way it sounded when I first thought about it in my head was funny. It's like, are you crazy? Are you serious? You're gonna be a mountain nomad? The career shift was the hardest because it meant a lot, because I have to quit my 9-to-5, face unpredictability, instability, you know, loss of finances significantly. And, you know, and basically have a very nomadic lifestyle where it can be also risky in many ways.
Your mom passing away, that factored into the decision. Why was that part of it?
Because actually that's when I had the clarity. Before that, I was still working. When she passed, I got a text message that she was gone. My office was nice enough to let me go. And so I was very numb when I got the message. I went to the funeral still feeling numb, in shock. And so I thought, I'm not going to think about anything right now. I'm letting myself just be, and I will deal with the funeral. You don't really have time for yourself, so you basically go through the motions. And then I came back to the U.S., and I thought, okay, this would be interesting. I'll come back and see how I feel about anything and everything. And so I came back, and I was trying to process what just happened. And then all of a sudden I thought, okay, well, obviously I need some break from my office, because, you know, and they were nice enough. They said, take as much time as you need. And so I thought more about it. And then the time came when they wanted to know what I was going to do. Do I want to stay out a little bit more or come back, whatever. During that time that I was away, when finally I had to come back, I knew at that point there and then that I didn't want to come back. And it was very clear to me. Before my mom passed away, I was wishy-washy. It was like, oh, you know, yeah, that sounds so cool to be a mountain nomad. You know, that sounds really neat. And this is how it's going to look like. I envision it. I thought about it. I daydream about it. And then all of a sudden, reality hits. Oops, I got to pay the bills. I'm being pulled two different ways still. But, you know, for some reason, once my mom left, there were no more questions and there were no more reasons. The answers to the question of, do I want to stay in being a lawyer, was very clear to me. It was a no. There was nothing. There was nothing left in me to feel like, yeah, I want to wake up one day and go back and hop on the metro and go to my office. It was gone. It died. Like, it's almost like my mom took it away with her. You know, it's like I woke up one day just feeling like it's a new beginning. It's hard to explain. It's a total disconnect from the career, total disconnect from that, like a book, a chapter just closed. And it was very cleanly done.
I was just going to ask if you think about that as like a gift from your mom.
Yes, I do. I mean, my mom was a very strong person in my life. Like, she's probably the most influential person ever. I wouldn't actually be surprised if it was just a way for her to put closure to so many things between us. And the feeling that she gave me growing up, where you can't do that, it's not good enough, you have to be this way, you have to be married, it's almost like the closure that we never spoke about, because I didn't get a chance to say bye to her either. And so I think with her strong personality and just the energy from her, in a way, I'm not really surprised that it's just a way for her to just sort of say, Marin, I'll move on, be at peace with the past, and do what you want. And just follow what you want. So I think the doubts, she took them away. And I'm completely at awe how I came back from the funeral. I thought it was just numbness, but it turns out to be clarity. Because it was just very, very peaceful, like quiet, no thoughts, no questions, no nothing. It was just like, yes, I'm going to be a mountain nomad.
Now, Marinelle is working full-time facilitating global treks through her company, Peak Explorations. She's passionate about creating jobs for locals in remote mountain regions. Why are you motivated to have all women treks and also have female guides on those treks?
I've not done all women treks at all until recently. All this time, it's always been co-ed. I let men and women join. But I understand and I agree completely. There's a bit of comfort level to be had in terms of being with all women. And there's a difference in terms of dynamics, because I've had situations where I'm the only person who's female and the rest are guys. So I always thought in my mind, I want to do it one day. I just couldn't figure it out. So at first I thought, well, it sounds like it's kind of an easy concept. You just create an all-women group and all-women hike to some country or even locally or whatever. Then I always had this voice in my mind, the 10 years I've been trekking, I always notice that every time I trek overseas, it's always men who's guiding. And there's not a lot of women on the mountain trails. There were like a few and far between. One that comes to my mind was this lady in Malaysia. She hiked with me and she was my guide. That to me was a shock. But the thing that's interesting, too, is one thing I realize is I'm also sort of part of the problem or the system, because when I was younger and I was doing this trekking, I'm like, of course, it's going to be a man. But then when I actually get a female guide, I'm actually internally shocked, like, oh, a woman? I mean, I'm going to be honest. When I was younger, I was thinking, I was questioning her ability. You know, I found myself internally questioning. I didn't tell her. I didn't ask her any questions. But in my mind, a woman. That's weird, you know, because I'm so used to men, because they're all over the trails. You know, it's always men guiding. But a woman, can she actually climb up Kinabalu in Malaysia? This is a lot of elevation gain, and she's carrying a pack. In my mind, I questioned her ability as a woman myself. So I'm guilty of it, too. And then over the years, I started paying more attention to it and trying to ask myself, is there a validity to what I'm thinking? Is there a validity to my seeing women this way? And I realized, no, there's no validity, honestly, because I've been trekking and I've been backpacking. And I actually, when I took a 1 year away from my job, and that's when I did a lot of trekking. And that's when I met a lot of guides and trekkers on the trail. And I saw men and women. And that opened my eyes, because it's like, you know what? Women are as strong as men. They're everywhere. It's just that it's not as common. The men are just dominating by numbers. So that's when I got the inspiration to not only empower the women hikers here, but also I wanted to combine it with the people working on the trail. Because it's not a matter of they don't want to do it. It's a matter of not giving them the chance to do it.
Is it ever difficult to find female guides?
Yes, it's not always easy. One example is the Peru trip that we just did in November. I went myself to join the first ever trek that we did with the indigenous women of Cusco region. They're from the Quechua community. The women lived in the area where we track. It's called the Huchuy Trail. And so it's actually their home. It's in the Sacred Valley of Cusco region. And when we created the program, I told my local contacts, I want us to combine the women here in the U.S., the hikers, with all women guides. And at first I was thinking, let's just hire Peruvian women, anyone from anywhere. And then my friend said, who's managing the program over in Peru, said, I think we can get the indigenous women to be part of this. I'm like, oh, wow, really? How are you going to do that? And the thing is, it is hard because it's very, very uncommon to have indigenous women do any trekking job or role. They don't partake in it. The job as guide and porters are done by men. No indigenous woman will ever play the role of portering and guiding. To them, that's unusual and that's very uncommon and unheard of in their community. So when we first started a few months back, I asked my contact, how are we doing with our program? He goes, I don't know, it's kind of hard. It's hard because you have to get them to buy into the idea. It's so unheard of that they're looking at us thinking, why? Why are we going to do that? What is the purpose of that? Because for them, it's ingrained what the roles are for men and women in their community, right? So we got into a cultural sort of wall where the indigenous women are looking at us like, why? We go work in the farm. That's what we do. Or we take care of the household. We don't do portering. That's so new to us. Why would we want to do that? Why would we be interested in that? So we had to have them buy into the idea and to convince them that there is a place for them on the mountain trails, that this is a position for them that they can do. And actually for them, it's easy to carry stuff because a lot of the women in the mountain regions of Cusco, they do work in the farms. And so they carry a lot. The physical part is not even hard. It's actually the mental that we had to break down the boundary. It's not the physical. It's not whether they can do it. They can do it physically. It was the mental thing. But in the end, I met them in person, 8 women from the Cusco region, Quechua community, and I was trying to see how it worked out, and they were very happy. They were like really thrilled to be part of the trekking industry. So they were thrilled because one, the income was much higher than farming. When they do portering, they only work like 2-3 days and they come home with more money than farming. And they probably earn enough for a month. So to them, it's like heaven sent of an idea and an opportunity. And to be honest, these ladies were amazing on the trails. The women who joined us from U.S. and other countries, that actually really inspired them to bridge those two worlds together, to actually put them in the same place in the same moment was amazing. I feel like it's like feeding off of each other in terms of inspiration and empowerment. So to me, I honestly think in the trekking industry, I think that's one of the most ultimate ways of like creating empowerment, both sides.
Do you see your story reflected in these women guides at all? Just where you grew up and you weren't encouraged to take on those kinds of challenges as a girl in the family?
Yes, I think most definitely. Actually, now that you said that subconsciously, I think it was subconscious until you told me. Now it's all conscious. But I think you're right. I mean, I grew up, and you know, the irony, my mom was the one who discouraged me a lot, you know. It wasn't even my dad. I think I could have gotten away with a lot with my dad, but my mom, it's like, no, you don't do that. No, you just don't do that, you know? But there's no reasoning behind it. There's no argument. There wasn't any kind of backup for it, right? So I think I grew up wondering what the heck what was that about, you know? Like, why is it that I couldn't do that? What kind of a rule is that anyway? And so when I become a lawyer, I think I became more like, that's not even logical at all. I think in a way for me to kind of compensate for that lost time is, you're right. The women that I work with, I see myself in them and I want them to break down that barrier. And I'm not going to be the one to tell them you can't do it. I'm the one telling them you can.
So we've got a whole year ahead of us. What are you excited about?
A lot of things. I feel like it's just another new chapter or another journey. So I just hope that there's going to be expansion in terms of the empowerment piece that we're working on with the Peru treks, that we could have more women join and just, you know, a lot more trips so that people can experience it. And I wanted to expand that project as well to other countries. Kilimanjaro is also under our radar, and we're working on a scholarship program for the women porters, because the problem over there is it's a highly patriarchal culture. So the women porters can't really break the glass ceiling to become guides. So I wanted to be able to figure out a way to do an empowerment project there where women from US will trek, and then, you know, they'll be led by women, women who are actually be able to break down those barriers and go to school, go get their guiding certificate once and for all, versus just waiting around for a local company to notice them. You know, honestly, I didn't quit my job to just sell tours. That's not really my idea. I, you know, to me, my career was very meaningful. What I learned from life, I learned it from the kids I worked with all these years. They're like kids who were abused or neglected. And I learned a lot from them, the resilience, the perseverance, and, you know, little things that you should be happy about and just being grateful. So I carry that over to Peak Explorations and what I do now. I feel like I never really left my lawyer job. I feel like I'm still an advocate. It's just something else, though. This is work, but it's not work. To me, it's actually a very personal journey. And a lot of it is very spiritual for me and very emotional, because maybe you're right. You know, you gave me a sort of an epiphany during this conversation that this is my way to compensate for those moments where I felt like there were voices in my head saying, you can't do it. Now I'm saying, oh, I'll do whatever and anything, you know, like I'm free. I'm free to do it. In a way, I'm saying that because my mom also is gone. And so that kind of put closure as well to the idea of you can't do it. So now I'm now wanting to see how far I can go. And maybe by doing that, I can inspire others as well. That would be really nice, so that they know you can go as far as you can.
You can read Marinelle's writing at www.browngaltrekker.com and learn about her company at www.peakexplorations.com. That's P-E-A-K explorations.com. Thank you to Marinelle for taking the time to talk with me. We actually talked for an hour and a half, so it was a lot to distill into this 30 or so minute conversation. There's a lot more to learn about her. You can also learn more about Marinelle and see photos from her treks on our episode landing page via she-explorers.com/podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Also pretty cool, we're now streaming on Spotify. Thank you to our sponsors, Health IQ and Deuter. Music is by Kay Angle, Lee Rosevere, Pipe Choir, and Josh Woodward. Next week, we talk with Nicole Brown, founder of Women Who Hike. Until then, have fun out there.